Blog Talk Radio. Hello.
Hey, Kenny, I'm going to the Hot New Jazz Club tonight.
Yes, yes, yes. Good morning.
Nah,
it is
man,
still
I can't do jazz. It's
8:59.
Just puts me to sleep.
Time to wake up.
Yeah,
do your thing.
Okay. All
right, man, I'll catch you next time.
This is Sound On Farms, and I'm George Brother Jr., your host. And we're going to get jump right into it with Mr. Kenny Love himself. Mr. Kenny Love.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Beverly?
Good. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. You seem like you had a phone call in the background, different line of conversation going on. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I'm sorry, is this the connection, I guess? So how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, man.
Can you please just give you a brief background of who you are and what you've been doing?
Well, I've basically been a recording artist for quite some time, since the actually early 80s. I had my first release out, my first commercial release out in 1990. I was out in the recording industry for about 8 years before I decided to venture off into public relations for representing other musicians and songwriters and recording artists worldwide in the areas of promotion and publicity. And so I spent the most recent 20 years doing that and semi-retired in 2010 and went back into the music artistry of my career.
Now, is all your videos, excuse me, is all your songs on video on YouTube?
No. In fact, there's only one song that I actually produced a video for. I did do some video work, but right now that jazz, it was Jazzman795. We've closed that YouTube account right there. We're going to put some other stuff up on a brand new site for 2014. But as far as YouTube goes, another channel. But I had done some videos, but they were just strictly for static videos to basically hold a presence on YouTube. But the actual music video, only music video that I did where I had animated individuals in it was that one you just played, which is Let's Dance.
Oh, man, I tell you what, I enjoyed that song. I've been jamming to it ever since I downloaded it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You know, it reminds me of my youth, actually. You know, it's just that time. Well, I'm 36 right now, so it brings me back to the 80s. You know, the 80s with the cool, you know, like Mars Day and the Time,
yeah,
and stuff like that. You know, the kind of vibe on it. You know, and I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? And even the video was great.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually quite a bit older than you, but I came up in the 70s myself. I actually went to college when I was in 1976. I was 18 years old, so I'll tell you, I've got about 20 on you. And I came up with that jazz funk era where that was a mixing of jazz and R&B and actually the first remnants of hip-hop or the first edges of hip-hop. And so I kind of got caught in that time warp with that type of music. It's very smooth and engaged, but at the same time, it's funky. You know, you can still dance to it and do, you know, get a real good groove off of it. So that's kind of where I am. Even with my writing of today, I kind of stay with that kind of flow and that bounce.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your gospel background?
Well, here's the thing that's going on now. I've written a number of gospel original tunes. And I have, for instance, there's a video on my KennyLoveJazz.com website where there's an excerpt of my live performance with my band, Abana. And we're doing, the first song we open it with is called Zion, and it has a funk beat to it. And I've also written one, kind of a quartet type, you know, those real jumpy quartet type songs called Sing On, Pray On. And then he'll be right there for you. I'm working on that one. That one has a real R&B sound, and I'm actually going to probably put at least one, because I have What a Friend. I did a rendition of What a Friend, jazz rendition of What a Friend on my case-sensitive CD that you have now. But I'm actually going to probably put, I may put all three of my gospel jazz tunes on there, and that's what it is gospel jazz. So it allows me to go out in concert and be able to play, you know, the jazz that I love as well as the gospel material. And so I have original gospel material, and I also take some old hymns and kind of, you know, jazz them up and everything. So I love doing that as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I just, you know, I love your music. And so I haven't listened to your gospel stuff. But I'm about to download it, and get a little feel for it. So I see that you do like philosophy in music. Can you talk about a little background about the what you teach other people about the philosophy of music?
Well, the thing about it is, I am trying to get musicians all across the board in all genres, including gospel and Christian music, and I probably should talk to the gospel musicians and Christian musicians on your show about that, because I've been trying to get gospel and I'm trying to get all types of independent musicians to basically take more control and be in charge of their own careers. And in terms of gospel musicians, one of the things that they can do, well, I've been suggesting to musicians as a whole that they start a local co-op of 3 to 5 bands or musical groups, if you will, and really their strength in numbers, so that they can go out and put on their own independent mini/micro concerts and be able to earn a better income as opposed to having to be at the disposal of other venues and that type of thing. And one thing, good thing about churches is church audiences are far more receptive, and jazz audiences are far more receptive than any other genres that I know. And usually churches are very much willing to work with artists, gospel artists, and Christian artists in that regard. They can come in and either sponsor their own show or they can have the church do it for them. So, and another thing I've been trying to teach musicians is to work with some of the, in this case, gospel musicians, to go to some of the Christian bookstores and get some of their music consigned to it. In other words, you will become your own wholesaler, distributor to those stores in order to make a better income, because right now CDs all across the board are pretty much lackadaisical in their sales. And so this is just an avenue for them to go in, and I've written some articles about that they can go on my site and find out, or email me for those articles as well. Teach them how to do that.
Well, oh, that's awesome, because, you know, that's very helpful. I've seen a gentleman, because I was prior military, I can go on post and go to the PA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a gentleman doing the same thing. And it was pretty cool to see him out selling his CDs. He had a gospel CD, he had a regular CD, and those are the kind of things that I'm trying to get people to understand. So I'm so
mm-hmm.
glad that you brought that up. I'm so glad that you brought that up,
mm-hmm.
and trying to get people to take control of their careers rather than trying to let a music company or something try to make them big, but where they can have their own independence and make themselves big, you know, through their independent work.
Well, I am prior military as well. In fact, I got out of the Army as an E5 hard stripe buck sergeant, and I thank the Army for actually doing a great deal to instill tenacity in me. My only regret with getting out was that I didn't reenlist and go right into. I should have gone into it from the get go and gone into the music portion of the military, but I didn't do that. Came out of college after several years and went on in and went into a completely different field. But I really wish I had stayed in and gone ahead and stayed in the band in there. But, yeah, that is one of the things that musicians need to really take an embrace. Right now they really don't have a choice. It's either do or don't. You'll either have to embrace it because, you know, record deals are not – the best even when you get one. And so now there are certainly few and far in between. So musicians that learn all they can, educate themselves, and get familiarized with the industry and how to get things done. You don't, fortunately today, you don't have to sell a million records just to make a decent income, because the bulk of what was happening with all those millions of sales was that the artist was getting very little of that money. Most of that was going to the record labels. So today, you've got your own music out there. You pretty much are making the lion's share of the income from it. So, i.e., you don't have to go out there and look for a million sales. If you could even do 20 to 30,000 sales a year, you can financially support yourself.
Wow, that's awesome. And that's just doing your own independent work.
Right.
Wow. I will make sure that I pass that along to these artists that have come on to my show. Because they don't, there's a lot of people who want to be in the industry and don't understand what the industry is doing. So I really, really thank you for that nugget of knowledge, you know, with your experience. You know, so I was wondering if I could play one of your songs, and then afterwards talk about it.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to play Voyage.
Okay.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Kenny Love, Voyage. Thank you. That's Mr. Kenny Love with Voyage. Serenity. I didn't see that Serenity part, but that's a beautiful song. Beautiful. It kind of has like a little chant in the background. Can you talk about the inspiration of making that song? And can you also talk about the inspiration of just making music, period? Because when I think about making music, I've got to be in a certain mood or whatnot. I don't know how to play any instrument. So can you kind of add on to that piece?
Yes. The thing about Serenity was it was one of the times, that I had taken, I was self-reflecting. And sometimes when I think music takes on a different perspective, well, I almost in fact know it does. I know it does for me personally. As a musician, as a composer, as a lyricist, and also I happen to be a fiction writer as well, so it just has a different perspective for me. I've been in it all of my life, practically. I started out at 4 years of age in music, and just kind of gone from one instrument to the other, picking it up. And I think the most what got me was, as I said, I came up experiencing jazz funk artists in the 70s, and there are four note chords that really took hold of my heart. And to be able to rearrange those chords, four notes, you C, E, G, B, and to be able to invert those and make different meanings from those. And that's what Serenity just happened to catch me at that type of moment. I was reflecting on something. But to write music in general, some people do it from a mechanical standpoint. In other words, I think there are levels of, almost like levels of spirituality, in fact, of music and how one perceives it. Some people just pick up an instrument and just want to play the instrument. That's all they ever want to do. They don't ever get into it. And I think that's where jazz and classical and gospel tend to have more, I would say, more of a deeper meaning to those musicians who embrace those genres of music. But it takes on a certain perspective for everybody and at different levels. I should just culminate with that and say that.
Can you also talk about the Let's Dance and what was the inspiration for that song? And and how did you make the video, or how did you come about making the video, please?
Well, Let's Dance was just a kind of a feel-good situation. I came up with the bass line, and then everything just went from there. I just started came up with the bass line, drum line, and just started stacking on different things, and then I wrote lyrics to it. Actually, the video has except for me, actually, my wife is a video producer, and she actually produced that video. And we did that video in my background, myself backgrounding, and visually I've got two background singers who also happen to be me. And we're both videographers to a degree. She actually taught me. But we came up with the scenario for it, and I told her that since the song was titled Let's Dance, I just wanted to depict and have different types of dancing, different cultures of dancing. As you know, we have Native Americans in there dancing. We have a Korean troupe dancing. We have a wedding party dancing. We have hip-hop dancers, everything. And so what I wanted to do was just make that song about what it is titled, dancing. And so what happened was I really got stock footage, bought stock footage, and kind of came up with those people, and we kind of inserted those into the video and that type of thing, along with myself at different points, depending on what was happening. Like when the scatting was going on, I would appear online and on screen and that type of thing. So that's pretty much how that was put together. And we kind of just, did it actually based on the soundtrack. And so we're fortunate enough to find dancers who were actually right there in the beats per minute and the tempo of my song.
That's pretty cool. So when you go to make the videos, Do you naturally have an idea of what you're going to do, or do you feel like the music itself creates the picture?
It's a little bit of both. You actually have to start out with some semblance of what you want, some idea, and then you just kind of let it up. You kind of start pulling on different aspects of your music. It's the same way with writing songs. You can hear, as I would say, you can hear a car horn outside that will have a note if you're a musician and you're in tune to that, or you can hear a dog barking or is something, or a rhythm of something going on outside, and it will inspire a song in you. And so you just take it and run from there. So it pretty much comes either – it comes from different angles. Sometimes it's the music, sometimes it's the lyrics, sometimes it's something somebody else said somewhere else, maybe on television, something somebody else done. Did on wherever. So you get to a certain point so far, and then you start letting things write themselves, so to speak, and play on themselves. Like what I would do, like in the studio, is I'd have my basics. I'd pretty much have the song the way I wanted it, so I thought. And I would go in the studio and I'd lay down, and that's why it's good not to go in there and just lay down a track and be done with it in one session, because you want to bring that back and get that away from you from the studio for a while. And then you want to listen at it from a listener standpoint instead of a producer standpoint. And you listen to it, and you think, and you find your gaps and things that spaces in the song that may need enhancement, or things that may even be overkill and need to be pulled out. So you get a chance to review and edit. And, you know, you go over it before you come up with the final draft. So that's pretty much how that works.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Because, I mean, I was thinking about making a documentary. So that helps me out as well. Can you talk about composing? Because I don't think a lot of people understand the difference between a composer and a writer. And they're not
well,
the same thing.
Well, the terms are almost interchangeable. You almost can't have one without the other. Writing, as it relates to music, can be either the composing of music or the creation of lyrics. I do both, of course. That makes me, while I'm a composer in general, I'm also a music writer and a lyricist. So it pretty much goes hand in hand, or they can be determined and termed separately, depending on what aspect you're speaking of, or if you're just speaking of one, or if you're speaking of them in combination. So that's pretty much most times, I guess, if people say they're a writer, they're going to talk about the words, the lyrics, in general, as to what most people understand. And then when a lot of people, it's just something that when they think about composing, then they are pretty much assigning and ascribing that to the music portion of it. But pretty much the terms are interchangeable.
For example, I tried to write a gospel song when I was in Iraq, and I tried without having I knew how the melody was in my head, but can a person who has a non-musical background actually write or compose a song without any type of musical background?
Yeah, you can. What you probably, if you're desirous of trying to reduce that to music and have that come out and record it as a musical project, if you can, most times, most music writers should be able to. You know, if you just even hummed something to me, I could find it on my instrument. I could find it on my piano and pretty much end up, we work together, we could come up with what pretty much exact, almost if not exactly what you were looking for, and maybe even some enhancements to what you were looking for. But if you've pretty much got an idea in your head, then, and you're a non-musician or non-music writer, you find someone who is willing to work with you, and you come together and you pretty much say, well, here's my idea. This is what I have in my head. This is how it ought to sound, blah, blah, blah. And that musician should be able to come up with something that will be complementary and even an enhancement to what your idea of what you're trying to create.
Can you talk about the copyright law and how easy it is to get sometimes caught up in that?
Well, the thing about copyright is copyright, generally, when you create something original by nature alone, by nature, for lack of a better phrase, it is automatically copyrighted. What people don't understand is that copywriting is not the act of actually going to the Library of Congress, which is where you go to get it registered. It's actually you register it to protect yourself. Because you want proof that should anyone steal your project or your work, that you have a reference of it, of having been the owner of it. So the thing about copyright is generally good for the life of the composer, the life of the writer, whatever you're doing to copyright, plus 90 years at this point, 90 years after your death. So, you have a long time before something goes into what is called the public domain. And the public domain just means after the death of the writer plus 90 years, then that song is up for grabs. You know, anyone can take it and do anything they want to with it legally, which is what I did with What a Friend. What a Friend, the authors had been passed away for 90 years. It was written back in the 1700s, maybe 1800s. And so I believe it was 1800s. And so I pretty much was able to do that and do that without any royalty obligation to any of the songwriters or their descendants.
And did you find that to be a good law or a bad law?
What, you mean the life of the writer plus 90 years?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I've never really entertained the actuality of that. I believe they have a purpose for doing that. I'm not sure what it is. It could be the delusion, and this may not have value at all in terms of information, but it could be the fact that by that time descendants are so, so spread out. I'm not really sure, but I honestly really haven't given that law any much thought.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I really haven't. I like being able to research things that I don't know anything about, and I will go and look that up and see what the sentiments are on that, because I've actually honestly never even given it a thought, because pretty much you just pretty much want to stay, make sure you're legal and in the parameters of the current copyright law. A lot of people, it's people right now, don't even know that the law has actually extended and expanded to 90 years. It used to be, I believe it was 70 years after death, 50 to 70 years after death. And I only learned that it had gone up to 90, well, during my last recording, which, when I released it back in 2011. So I had to go and research that to find out what it was, to be able to even entertain the idea of using What a Friend on the album.
Right. And I want to talk about the marketing aspect of music, because I know you brought it up, but I want to make sure that my listeners drive this home, especially those who want to be independent artists. How do you successfully or feel successful to a point where you think that your marketing is doing well? What are the keys of marketing that you need in order to be successful?
Well, first of all, you have to know your music. You have to know your music first and foremost, because that's something that I think most musicians and music creators believe they do to a certain point, and they do to a certain point. But when you start talking about the business aspect of marketing music, you have to really break down and define that even a little bit more, because it's kind of like writing an ad. A simple 10-12 word ad, a lot of people think, wow, this is easy as pie. But when you get in there and you start working with it and you start figuring out the parameters of it, such as, what do I say? How do I say it? How much do I say? How little do I say? At what point do I stop? You know, you have to. It starts to become a little difficult, even with 10 or 12 words. You know, and then the fact that you've got only so much space and time to say it in and do it in. So it becomes something that seems simple on the surface becomes can become extremely difficult, and unless you know the more difficult to become. So what you have to do with your music, and having said that, you not only have to you have to break it down and find out what listener you have to consider the demographics, the age, you know, the culture, what your music, who your music is likely to who is likely to embrace your music. Best, you have to, you go out there and you field test it in terms of, the great thing is being able to do it online now, such as you could, you know, you, before you put your music out there on radio, which tends to cost you even just by sending out music alone, well, much of which can be done with MP3s today, but you still have to do, in a lot of cases, send out CDs to radio stations. What you really should do first as a musician, let's say if you're a gospel and Christian artist, what you need to do is find your own church, let people listen to your MP3 files or online, go to church groups on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and let people listen to your music and let them honestly comment on your music and let them listen to all your music that you're preparing to release. And a lot of times these people are gems and gold mines for you to make the best decision possible on what to release first. And so that's some free information that's invaluable that you can't buy. I mean, you couldn't pay for that. You know, so they're going to tell you honestly. They have absolutely no reason to, you know, shine you on, so to speak. So you definitely want to go out there and field test it first before you go and even have it manufactured, you know. So that lets it, and you know, you just sit there and look at the responses and listen to the responses and see what people, you know, don't get an attitude, but see what people actually have. Find positivity in what people say about the music and listen to it and make notes of it, and they will almost write your success for you ahead of time.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome to hear because I know a lot of people are trying to get their music out there, but they don't know about the marketing aspect of it, and I really appreciate you taking your time to lay it out so easily for them, because that's invaluable information that you won't get anywhere else. So hopefully you guys are listening, are going to go back and re-listen, and then you'll tell your friends, Mr. Kenny Love is dropping nothing but nuggets. He's dropping nothing but nuggets on this show. So so I'd like to play another song. I think it's called Sedona. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes, it is.
So, Donna, I want to go ahead and play that, and then I want you to talk about that song as well.
Okay.
Sedona by Mr. Kenny Love. I tell you what, I mean, every time I listen to your music, I'm just enjoying your music. Before we start, can you please give the listeners a link or a place where they can go and get your music?
Yes, they can go simply over to KennyLoveJazz.com. It's KennyLoveJazz.com. And they'll be able to find all types of information over there about me and my music and some of the other ventures that I'm involved in as well.
I'm telling you, it's some great stuff. I'm not saying that just because you're on my show.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I just want you to know that it is really awesome for you being on the show and then telling us all these great things, and we're getting to listen to some good music. That's the most important thing. But can you tell me and our listeners about where the inspiration for Sedona came from?
Sedona is actually a place in Arizona known for its red rocks. It's also home of one of the largest jazz festivals in the world. In fact, people from all over the world literally from all over the world come to the annual Sedona Jazz Festival. I, however, ironically, have never attended it, and I lived out in Phoenix for 5 years, out in Arizona for 5 years. But it is a from you know, my understanding of people I've known that have done that and appeared on there, is one of the top jazz festivals in the world.
Oh,
and so
okay.
I just wanted to run a song. I just kind of wondered, you know, Sedona, just kind of, it kind of caught me. It just one of those things, like I told you about the car horn, the dog barking, that type of thing. It was the rhythm of that phrase that just, Sedona, you know, just kind of, I got to do something with that. I want to see what I can do with that. So that's the end result.
Oh, no doubt. I have actually been to Sedona.
Okay.
I just didn't know that you were referring to that Sedona.
Yes,
but,
indeed. Yeah.
But yeah, it is definitely a great place to be, and a great place to look at, because, like you said, if you've never been there, you have never experienced it, and it's very beautiful, very beautiful. So. The melody, the tunes, where does that come from?
Just kind of almost like a natural fit to it. It was just a very little that I deviated from, depending on where that song was going from chord wise. And I just kind of wanted something that had a kind of a contra flow, but at the same time, from what the bass was doing, to some point in the song of matching back up, kind of like going down, you know, two people going down two different paths, parallel, and then meeting up at like a fork in the road or something like that. So that's where that came from. And then the change was just kind of like a detour. Sort of a slight detour, and then back to the home plate, and then the rock. It was more or less created as just a kind of a groove, you know, just a groove, back and forth groove.
Awesome. We're running out of time, so is there anything else that you wanted to say that I didn't talk about, that you wanted to bring up that might have been worth noting?
Not particularly, but. Just for musicians to understand that they really must become their own record labels today. It's without a doubt. I mean, you know, back in the day is that, you know, we spent a lot of money and time and on product, trying to record product and get it out to labels. Now that is almost non-existent now. Record labels are a figment of the imagination, and that they really need to break down any kind of information and education that they can get to further their careers. They should be readily absorbing that. And to also, again, to go over to my website, there's also another website, number1waypr.com is our site as well, which is a public relations site and promotion site, and they go over it. I'm also, for any of your listeners who are in East Texas, maybe in East Texas or Tyler, Texas, I am also looking for musicians from the Tyler, Longview, and Kilgore area, because I'm doing a humongous concert Valentine's night in Tyler, Texas. And anyone who is interested in playing with me, send me an email. Just go to my website and click on the contact button and send me an email, and hopefully they can be a part of my big 10-piece band that I'm going to have out there.
Oh, that's awesome. I know exactly where all those places were. I had friends who lived out in Longview, Texas. I've driven through Tyler, Texas millions of times going to Louisiana. So I know exactly where you are. We currently live in Wichita Falls. So so we kind of live both in Wichita Falls and Oregon. So we're going to go get our stuff, and then we're going to move out of Texas. But it would be great to, you know, link up with you, or, you know, have a lunch or dinner or something like that, and just kick it, and we can listen to music all day or whatever, and it'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. That'll be cool. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Kenny Love, I appreciate him coming on the Sign Off Farm show. If you could, sir, could you please post your links on my Facebook page? That way people will have access to it as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I will.
And hopefully you'll come back when you're, you'd like to advertise your Valentine's Day concert. You come on and promote it.
Okay. Would love to. I appreciate
awesome.
That.
Well, not a problem. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time, sir. It's been great.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Have a good day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Kenny Love giving us a beautiful, beautiful down-the-earth understanding. And so we're going to play Fly by Mr. Kenny Love.
Thank you. Thank you.